A Tempo is a production of the Classical Network and is made possible by the support of listeners like you. Thank you for your support.
Welcome to A Tempo, the Classical Network spotlight on the arts and culture. I'm Rachel Katz, and I'm your host for this journey into issues facing the performing arts. Each week, I'll bring you some of the latest news and also take time to examine many of the issues these organizations are facing. We'll look at the impact of the economy, technology, and society on the arts, the importance of arts education, and how these organizations and ensembles are adjusting and innovating as they face the future. Today, we'll hear from the Philadelphia Orchestra about its recently announced 2017-2018 season. Among the highlights are a project compiling voices and sounds from across the city and celebrations marking the 100th birthday anniversary of Leonard Bernstein. We'll hear about that and other season highlights from Jeremy Rothman, Vice President of Artistic Planning. As part of A Tempo, we're pleased to bring you some of the news from around the world of the performing arts. Stanislav Skrovachevsky, who led the Minnesota Orchestra for nearly two decades, passed away this week at the age of 93. According to the Star Tribune, the Polish-born Skrovachevsky was a driving force in building up the Minnesota Orchestra's artistic reputation during his tenure from 1960 to 1979. When the orchestra's musicians were locked out during a labor dispute in 2012, he took up the baton to conduct them in their own concert. Skrovachevsky initially studied piano and violin, but a hand injury during World War II ended his piano career. He was introduced to U.S. audiences when he was invited to conduct the Cleveland Orchestra by George Zell, and shortly after he escaped communist Poland and was named music director of the Minnesota Orchestra. Known for his Bruckner recordings, Skrovachevsky conducted the Eighth Symphony with the Minnesota Orchestra in what would be his last concert this past October. According to the Star Tribune, he suffered a stroke in November, followed by a second one in February. The Minnesota Orchestra is planning a memorial service March 28th. There are big plans in the works for Tanglewood that will add new buildings, enhance its landscaping, and expand offerings to include more audience education programs. The Boston Symphony Orchestra said the $30 million project will add a four-building complex to provide more performance and rehearsal space for the Tanglewood Music Center. These buildings will also house the Tanglewood Learning Institute, which will offer seminars, panel discussions, artist talks, and other audience engagement activities, and a cafe to provide space for musicians and audiences to interact. The project will also make some improvements to the existing Ozawa Hall. Other improvements include new plants and a better irrigation system, and a new stewardship program to better support and preserve its landscaping. The BSO hopes to open the new complex for Tanglewood's 2019 season. The John F. Kennedy Center for the Performing Arts is planning to throw a 100th birthday bash for its namesake. The center announced that it will devote the week of May 23rd to 29th to special theater, dance, and music performances to honor Kennedy. The programs include a concert by the National Symphony Orchestra featuring cellist Yo-Yo Ma, a performance of the Hubble Cantata, a work that explores the birth, life, and death of a star and will feature baritone Nathan Gunn and music director Julian Wachner, and a Washington Ballet production of Frontier, a commission inspired by President Kennedy's hopes for America's artistic, cultural, and intellectual excellence. More information can be found at kennedy-center.org. As I reported several weeks back, arts organizations are warily awaiting federal budget season amid reports that the new budget presentation will cut all funding for the National Endowment for the Arts. I'll be checking in from time to time with various music and arts organizations about what cuts might mean for them, and today we'll hear from Gabriel Van Alst, Executive Director of the New Jersey Symphony Orchestra, about how that funding supports their programs and audiences.
It's not just the direct NEA funding that impacts the orchestra, but it's also the NEA funding to the New Jersey State Council on the Arts, because the New Jersey State Council on the Arts is the orchestra's biggest funder, and they actually receive about 5% of their funding from the NEA. And that's not just something for New Jersey, but it's all over the country. You know, one of the big sources of funding for the arts is state arts councils, and the NEA do support all of them. And that's really important to us. So, you know, on a micro level, on a project-by-project level, it really varies year to year. But given that the orchestra receives about $1 million each year from the State Council on the Arts, if they were to lose 5% of their funding, that's at least $50,000 for us just there, whether or not we were to get individual project funding. So, you know, that's quite a considerable amount of money, and that can really impact you know, that could wipe out an education program, 50,000, you know, or 60,000 or whatever it is. That could really impact us if we lost that on an ongoing basis.
Having funds available either directly or through the state council, what does that allow you to do as an orchestra that you would not be able to, or you might not be able to pursue otherwise?
That's a tricky question because it's a sort of theoretical one. And until we were, heaven forbid, to lose the money, it would be hard to say what we would lose specifically in our projects. But I would say that the money from the Arts Council and the money from the NEA really helps us bring art to communities that otherwise wouldn't have access to the arts. And that's really important to the Symphony, and that's really, I think it's important to the NEA. I mean, they talk about the fact that, you know, significant percentages of their funding should go to low-income audiences and under-reached populations. So I would say that if we were to lose the funding, we wouldn't be able to service them, those audiences and those demographics, as well as we can at the moment. And that's really important because there is a perception that the arts can be seen as elitist. And at the Symphony, we really try to create an environment and an orchestra that serves our community, whether you're rich or you're poor, or you have access or you don't have access. We really try to provide an opportunity to get out into the community as much as possible. And that's the thing that would be a risk. I mean, I couldn't point to a specific program, but I would say that our ability to get out in the community would be jeopardized. And that would be really sad.
Fundraising is always a tricky issue, no matter just in general, year to year. If you have to start going down that what-if scenario, what other possible outlets are there for maintaining the level of programs that you have?
You'd have to look at individual or corporate support to sort of fill the gap. But as you said, fundraising is always a challenging prospect. And every year, all of the arts organizations in the country and, of course, in New Jersey are going out there. And there's a limited amount of very philanthropic people. And we love our supporters and our donors and the organizations that support us in New Jersey. And this puts extra pressure on them because those donors and supporters and patrons and corporations, they're passionate about the work that we're doing and they're passionate about supporting their communities. But if the NEA were to go away, that just puts additional pressure on them.
What about throughout the arts world? Are you and your colleagues starting conversations already about how to navigate this uncertain territory?
I was actually at the opening of the Haynes, the refurbishment of the Haynes building earlier this week. And of course, a number of us leaders of arts organizations in the community were there. And we were talking about this because everyone is concerned, not just for our own, as I said, not just for our own finances, but for the community. And of course, the ongoing economic impact that this has, because, you know, there's all sorts of research to show that every dollar that is spent on art gives back into the community significantly. We're an economy in ourselves within New Jersey, and if support is taken away, that's going to impact other people well beyond the arts community as well. And I think that that's the conversation that we're having, and how are we going to try to get that message out there to our representatives to say, you know, this is something that is bigger than the arts as well, to try to dissuade them from these cuts. The only point I would like to end on, I guess, is that to stress the economic impact that this will have, not just on the arts industry, because, you know, as an organization, we put $12 million into the New Jersey economy every year. And when you think about what goes on around a concert and the other industries that are impacted by us, restaurants and fuel and cars, I mean, it does sound very small and petty, but actually these things add up. And, you know, there's statistical research that shows that the arts bring money to the country and the state. And of course, there's the educational impact, which I can't stress enough. Again, there's proven studies that children who have arts education do better at school. They're better citizens and well-rounded. They stay in school longer. They get better grades. And we have to think about the generation that comes after us. We have our wonderful youth orchestra program that essentially young players can work side by side with, are mentored by our wonderful musicians, and they have great concerts. We just had a winter concert, and you know, it's really inspiring. We have our CHAMPS program, which is an Il Sistema style program to develop young students. We have a training orchestra, which is Newark based and really trying to go into underserviced communities and give people musical training, and we take that all very, very seriously. We have what we call reach events, which are community chamber music concerts, where we go out into the community and we perform and we take music to people who might otherwise not be able to get into the halls. We offer student tickets. We have children's performances at NJPAC. You name it, we try to do it. And, you know, there's always more we can do, and we're always striving to do more in this sort of community space.
That was Gabriel von Alst, Executive Director of the New Jersey Symphony Orchestra. Those are just some of the headlines from around the arts world. When orchestras began to unveil their 2017-2018 season, one of the emerging themes I seemed to notice was a focus on American music and culture. That thread was continued this week when the Philadelphia Orchestra announced details on its upcoming season. Among its highlights are a salute to Leonard Bernstein on his centenary, a continuation of the orchestra's American Sound series, including works by Jennifer Higdon and Michael Tilson Thomas, and a citywide project called Philadelphia Voices that will be crowdsourced and created by composer Todd Machover. Other performances will include Haydn's The Seasons, a semi-stage production of Puccini's Tosca, and works by Beethoven, Brahms, Schubert, and more. I spoke with Jeremy Rothman, the orchestra's vice president for artistic planning, about the various programs that will take the stage under the baton of music director Yannick Nézet-Séguin and various other conductors throughout the season.
It's a very diverse season, and it's very creative. It shows Yannick and the orchestra in a wide variety of styles, from intimate chamber music, like the Elgar piano quintet that Yannick is going to join our string principals for, to a large-scale staged opera. Yannick will do Bach, and he will also do Broadway with Bernstein's West Side Story in a concert version. So it's a great breadth and variety of what we offer. You know, there's Bruckner, there's Bruckner 8, there's Shostakovich, Leningrad, you know, large-scale symphonic forces, and also large-scale community forces with the Todd Machover Philadelphia Voices. So we've created these main pillars, these things that sort of hold the season and ties together the various highlights that we have. So you've got West Side Story and Haydn's Seasons Oratorio. You've got a British Isles Festival and Todd Machover's work and Tosca. And between all of that, we have a connectivity of programs that tell a story over the course of the season.
Well, there have been some observations in past seasons that perhaps Philadelphia was bringing out relatively conservative programs compared to what we had seen from some other orchestras. What in particular made this year the right year to really bring something this diverse and different?
We've continued to be very diverse in our offerings and be adventuresome in the commissions that we have presented, commission weekends, in presenting bold pieces like Mahler's Eighth Symphony or Leonard Bernstein's Mass. So obviously I disagree with any characterization that somehow we have been conservative or safe in our programming. We obviously take great care for what is the core collection of symphonic pieces, and we have looked each year to balance new and adventuresome programs with also some works that are very familiar and actually often don't get a lot of hearings in the concert hall because they're so popular, which seems sort of oxymoronic. But it really is the case that when you look at a score like Sleeping Beauty or Swan Lake, they actually, or 1812 Overture, they actually don't get proper hearings and performances in concert halls. And in some ways, that in and of itself is a bit adventuresome. So I won't go too much down that path. Every year, we look to incorporate new and fresh ideas into programming while honoring the great traditions of the orchestra. And we think that this season continues in that tradition of what Yannick has been doing over the last 5 years as music director.
Well, I wanted to drill down a bit and look at some of the specific programs. First of all, the Philadelphia Voices Project.
Mm-hmm.
What are some of the ways that you envision that bringing together so many different elements of the Philadelphia community?
Todd Macover is a wonderful collaborator. He's based at the MIT Media Lab in Boston and has done a number of these projects. His work is really about the integration of the human experience, technology, and music, and uses all kinds of ways to engage individuals and groups through technology to create music, whether they've got a musical background or a performing background or not. And Todd is already meeting with a number of our community partners. We have a collection of initiatives that we call HEAR, H-E-A-R, Health, Education, Access, and Research. And in all those areas, we have developed partnerships with organizations like the Broad Street Ministry, which is right across the street from the Kimmel Center and provides support and resources for those experiencing homelessness and trauma. Through our education work, we have connected with the School District of Philadelphia and the High School for the Creative and the Performing Arts with the KIPP Charter Schools. Through our access programs, we perform school concerts. We are out in the community working with a variety of partners out in the community. So we've already been introduced to a lot of folks in Philadelphia over the last couple of years through our HEAR initiatives, and Todd is using those relationships to expand that work and expand our relationships beyond that deeper into Philadelphia.
One of the aspects of the Philadelphia Voices Project will be not just the broad reach and trying to bring in so many different community groups, but also the multimedia aspect of it, using social media, working with the MIT Media Lab. How do you see that all complementing the musical and creative side of that?
That is very much the way that Todd Macover will collect all of the material that will later be shaped into the final piece. And we're looking at every way that we can make this technology available and accessible to everyone here in Philadelphia and have a chance to contribute.
Well, there are two other aspects on the season that are very home-focused to a certain extent. The first is celebrating the centenary of Leonard Bernstein. What are some of the ways you hope to celebrate and explore his musicality, his legacy, and also his ties to Philadelphia?
His time in Philadelphia was a relatively brief as a student at Curtis, studying conducting. He did come back and conduct the orchestra on a number of occasions at the Academy of Music and at the Robin Hood Dell, now the Mann Music Center. We are celebrating his legacy as a composer, as a performer, as an educator. We are representing his compositions for stage, for film, for the concert hall. So through West Side Story, through his On the Waterfront Suite, through his Second Symphony, the Serenade, the Chichester Psalms for voice. Those are ways that we are exploring his work as a composer. And we're also presenting a family concert with his daughter, Jamie Bernstein, that will harken back to his legacy as an educator and someone who inspired youth. We are also fortunate to be able to have a conversation and a collaboration with the National Museum of American Jewish History, who will be mounting an exhibit on Leonard Bernstein's life at their museum on Independence Mall in the spring of 2018, which will coincide with some of our performances as well.
You'll also be presenting American Sounds. How do you see that fitting into the overall arch of the season?
This is something that we are looking at over multiple years and has been part of our work really since we did Leonard Bernstein's Mass back in 2015, which was a work that incorporated so many American vernaculars, rock and roll and blues, Broadway. And we are looking at works that continue to utilize. This is not necessarily about American composers, but about composers that utilized American vernaculars, American sounds. That may be folk music, it may be jazz, maybe rock and roll, might be electronica. Coming up soon this season, Mason Bates, the composer based in Washington, D.C., We're doing one of his pieces that incorporates technology and electronica as part of the 17-18 season that we've just rolled out. We've got a work by Wynton Marsalis, which obviously is very much informed by his jazz background, a work by Michael Tilson Thomas that incorporates sort of R&B style, jazz style, a jazz band, but also Dvorak, who used American folk tunes in his American suite. It's Leonard Bernstein and West Side Story. It's Jennifer Higdon, it's Sam Jones, American composer that also draw very much on sort of our American-based music making. So this is something that we will continue to explore and be part of our message in supporting American composers and American styles of music over multiple years.
Well, another part of the community outreach, community engagement, is the continuation of having Hannibal Lokumbe as your composer in residence. Mm-hmm. What will he be doing through the course of the coming season?
Hannibal will continue. He was here last season and premiered a 45-minute oratorio. So again, in the ways that our previous seasons were just as exploratory and adventuresome, he was here last year and premiered a piece with great success, incorporating a lot of input from the community in Philadelphia. And he will be doing that more so by meeting with the citizens of Philadelphia where they are, whether it's through Broad Street Ministry, whether it's at a church, at a museum, at a detention center. He is meeting people one-on-one or in very small groups, sharing his music with them. This Saturday, he's going to be doing a museum crawl between the African American History Museum and the National Museum for American Jewish History and performing a string quartet that he's based on the story of Anne Frank. So he'll share his music with Philadelphia, and individuals will share their thoughts, inspirations, and musical ideas with Hannibal, and he'll be crafting this into another piece, a community commission, in the same way that Todd Macover's piece is a commission for the community of Philadelphia. Hannibal will be writing a piece that will incorporate a lot of performers from Philadelphia for 18-19 season.
Well, in looking at how Yannick put the season together, it does seem to reflect a lot of his own passions. He mentions, for example, Haydn's The Seasons is something he's wanted mm-hmm. to do for a while. And, of course, bringing a semi-staged production of Tosca just speaks to his interest in opera. How have you seen him crafting the Philadelphia Orchestra seasons over the time that he's been here as music director?
Yannick does not see the boundaries between genres. And he is very ambitious when it comes to taking on all styles of music, so long as it's good music and great performers. He wants the orchestra to be able to perform in a variety of styles, both with him on the podium or with guest conductors on the podium, and be a very versatile ensemble, one that is able to express a variety of great interpretations. And he does look at specific composers or cycles that he would like to do, but he is not traditional in the way that he approaches, I'm going to do a Mahler cycle, or I'm going to be a composer or a conductor that does great French repertoire. He will not narrow himself into that, or the orchestra into that kind of approach. So, yes, he'll look at Haydn and say, I think this is an important composer for building the orchestra, and we get a lot of requests from our audience for Haydn, so we're going to embark on a Haydn project, and the seasons will help kick that off. He's going to do a Sibelius focus, so the first symphony of Sibelius is going to kick that off. But he's looking bigger picture over multiple years as to how these projects fit in. It's not just a one-off, I really have a penchant to do this particular piece, or I want to do it in three different places, therefore will you schedule it here? He really looks at the big picture across the symphony, across the season, and also across our recording and touring activities, and you know, what the profile of the Philadelphia Orchestra will be everywhere we go.
Well, as you mentioned, there are just so many different highlights coming up in the season. What would you say are some of the other key things that you think will really stand out throughout the course of the season?
Oh, boy. Like, what are my favorite programs? Boy, you know, I already talked about MTT's program, but I think that's going to be a fantastic experience. His work, Four Preludes on Playthings of the Wind. I think people will be delighted by Stefan Denev's 4 weeks as principal guest conductor and his specific focus on the music of Guillaume Connaissant. I hope that this will be perhaps the biggest musical discovery for audiences that season. Stefan is really celebrating his music through the performance of 3 10-minute works, probably each about 10 minutes long, of Guillaume Conesson. This is a really fresh and exciting voice. He's about 47 years old, and we've done some pieces of his in the past. But for Stefan to really put his music forward and let people experience his music over the course of the season is something that I think will be a real delight for people. Also, as we feature Hilary Hahn as an artist in residence, and for people to understand that she's not just a great musician and able to play Bernstein and Prokofiev and Dvorak on the season, but that also she's a well-rounded and compassionate human being who's going to be involved in our HEAR initiative. She's going to be involved in the community. She's going to host and present as part of one of our family concerts, as will Stefan Denev be on a couple of our family concerts. Every January, we take people away to a distant location. While it's chilly here in Philadelphia, we try to imagine being somewhere else for a few weeks, and are focused on the rich music of the British Isles, and a very diverse 3 weeks that we have there. Yannick presented the Leningrad Symphony. This is a real destination work. Large orchestral forces, a very emotional and compelling work of Shostakovich in response to very difficult wartime years in his hometown of St. Petersburg, Leningrad, and contrasting that with Joshua Bell performing the Vinyovsky Second Violin Concerto, which was written by Vinyovsky while he was teaching in St. Petersburg long before the Revolution. But it's a fascinating juxtaposition of the two different worlds of St. Petersburg and Leningrad that was experienced. So it's wonderful to get to present artists in that very diverse way over the course of our season.
Well, I did want to ask about Stefan. The orchestra recently extended the contract for mm-hmm. another 3 years. What has he brought to the orchestra, and what has really made him such a good fit as principal guest conductor?
Well, first and foremost, he's able to make fantastic music with the orchestra and is beloved by our audiences here and in Saratoga, Vail, and in Florida and on tour. Stefan is also a great collaborator and a great mind. He shares a similar vision for symphonic music and for the profile of the Philadelphia Orchestra. So when we have particular projects or ideas, he is a very willing partner in creating those with us. This year he's doing the Rachmaninoff Festival in April. He's helped to celebrate the music of John Williams. He has collaborated with dance companies here in Philadelphia. He's collaborated with dance companies in Saratoga, New York, with the New York City Ballet. So he's someone who is very adventuresome. He's imaginative. Brings great ideas to the table himself, and is able to take our concepts for the Philadelphia Orchestra and shape them in ways that are really artistically compelling and make for great performances.
That was Jeremy Rothman, Vice President for Artistic Planning at the Philadelphia Orchestra. You can find more information on the orchestra season at philorc.org. I hope you enjoy the conversations I bring you each week on Tempo and all the other programs of the award-winning Classical Network. Remember, these programs are possible only through your support of this station. To become a member of the Classical Network, go to wwfm.org and click on Donate. Thank you for being a member of the global listening community that is the Classical Network. Thank you for joining me for Tempo. I'm your host and producer, Rachel Katz. An archive of recent shows can be found anytime at our webcast page at wwfm.org. Join me next week for another look at the changing world of the performing arts. A Tempo is a production of the Classical Network and is supported by the listener members of the Classical Network.